All right. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. We're running a little bit behind. Welcome to this session on archiving. My name is Sandy Rodriguez. I am at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, also on the board. We have four fantastic presentations for you, and since we're running behind, I'm just going to go right to the bios, and hopefully we'll take questions after each presentation, but if we're running behind, we might have to defer them until the end. So our first presenter is Eric Saltz. Eric Saltz is a digital humanist and audiovisual archivist from the American South. He is a two-time winner of the Inez Shands Lions Servant Leadership Award. He joined ARSC in 2012, and this is his first presentation at an ARSC conference. Welcome. Hopefully not his last. His areas of research include streaming access, materialism, and thing theory. Currently, Eric is working with the Greensboro Historical Museum and Wake Forest University's Digital Kitchen, restoring oral histories concerning the gentrification of the Triad region in North Carolina. And his presentation is titled Archives as an Artist, Defining Relationships Between Collections, the User, and Society.
Within the past three decades, alongside the evolution of digital technologies, society interactions with audiovisual materials has transitioned into a new type of relationship. People are no longer looking to access or spread information by conventional means, i.e. declining rates of patrons in libraries or special collections, or the death of chain music bookstores or video rental houses. I miss Blockbuster so much. And this has prompted a reconsideration of traditional methods. Society wants to be more personal, on a more personal level with the material they are relating towards. In the last 15 years, we've seen a huge development with how the user, society, and artists would engage with the media. Due to the inescapability of information and communication technologies, especially the advent of mobile technologies, society is increasingly experiencing all type of information at a universal presence. As Arthur Berger points out in his text, Media and Society, audiovisuals and mass media entertain us. They socialize us, inform us, educate us, sell things to us, or sell us as audiences to advertisers, and indoctrinate us, among other things. So there are questions that will arise when I say, what am I talking about? We need to look at relationships. What is this framework I'm using to examine our new paradigm? Once this framework is put together, what are the interactions that take place between each group, and how does that impact our collections? What are these groups' roles going forward, and how do we use audiovisuals differently to strengthen these relationships? What should we be concerned with next? You'll notice throughout my discussion, I'll keep raising questions. I can tell you right now that there are no correct answers. We all have different ways to accomplish our tasks. I can only illuminate to you what I have found, and this hopefully will change our perspective on how we treat our relationships with collections and our patrons. Before I continue, we should be reminded what we're trying to achieve by improving each relationship. I tend to boil these down to five objective areas. We know them quite well, so I'll try to gloss over them quickly. There are obviously more topics I could talk about when mentioning what fundamentals are. However, I feel these five exemplify what our job is in order to make these relationships thrive. Accessibility. This is the road to growing a strong relationship with our patrons and materials, and it starts by enabling them to access our collections. Now more than ever, this can be easily accomplished. How can we elevate these methods, and how should this be done? Usability. Once we can access something, are we able to use it, and how effectively? Going forward, that methodology that we employ could that be improved for the user's perception of experience? The intrinsic value. As we continue digitizing materials to save them, we must figure out a way to still keep the essence of the original alive, or to make sure the original has a place in this digital era. In order to grow relationships between our materials and our patrons, our goal should be to improve how we present material, and that's why we have to focus on exhibitions. And then preservability, where the creator of the item can no longer care for the material, can no longer protect it for physical deterioration or damage to minimize the loss of information, extend the life of its cultural property. We have the responsibility and obligation to not only protect records of the past, but also provide our future with opportunity of discovery. Accomplishing these goals will see our organizations grow, but more importantly, will set the stage for how we observe our collections. So this is the framework I was talking about when I was mentioning relationships. As we can see here, it's set up like a triangle. We have three different groups, the artist, the universe, and the audience. Here, we can look at these focal points to kind of get a sense of what the relationships are. This framework actually comes from a 20th century literary critic, M.H. Abrams. It details the structure of relationships and the roles of each when compared to the work that's being dissected. So if we take the middle, that's the work or text. In the center of the diagram, it is the material in our collections. Every group interacts with the work on a different level and vice versa. Common examples from our collections are manuscripts, photographs, ephemera, and in this case for us, audio files. Then we have the artist or creator. Those who are responsible for the creation, dissemination, context, form, and original intent of the work. For our purposes, the ordinary patron and even our archives themselves can be the artist. An audience or user is that third group. This group consists of a single individual user interacting with and responding to the text with their own personal experience. And then we have the universe or society. This is the largest entity which the artist and the audience is a part of. This group's relationship is very complex. As users identify and relate towards the work, the masses develop a wide range of emotions and opinions, forming an overarching consensus on the material, its subject matter, its implications, and how the work can change society's conventions into new paradigms. The best example of the universe is our learning communities that access our materials. So then what I've done is I've modified that framework, because that was written at the turn of the 20th century. What I've done here is I've kind of still taken the same basic premise, but I've added in a fifth kind of group, and I've called that the medium or media. And what that's done is the medium is a delivery system that carries the program, material or item. Past delivery methods have been radio, television, newspaper, record players, and film. Abrams was writing about literary works, so the medium print was not an important consideration for him. In my analysis, there are several types of media playing varying roles in the creation and disseminating texts. With the creation of the digital age, a new category of carrier for communication was born, and that's streaming technology. Basically, the 21st century framework proves on Abrams' analytical scheme by providing new motives for each of the four groups. The medium's job as the carrier is not to only be a tool for each relationship and group, but also a means to change perspectives and defining characteristics for the work of each group. The medium also acts as a separate entity that facilitates who, where, what, why, and how the materials relate to the subject, gaining access to it. This proposes that the medium itself may hold a bigger stake in the outcome that affects the surroundings of the work and society it revolves around. what's key to these relationships? These relationships are based around what I believe we need to focus on next, which is interactivity. Our relationships with our collections historically have been the presentation of information. Our profession has been trying to give information, which is not a problem. It was the first step. However, today's society has changed. That change started with the artist. Their work is created and reflects the outside world. Abrams' theory closely observes subjects, languages, effects, and values of the creator's work. For example, he suggests that the primary source and subject of a matter of piece of music are the attributes and actions of a musician's mind. If the music reflects the world, then they are derived from aspects of the external world and transformed into music by feelings and operations of the musician's mind. A genuine relationship between these two parties should show an echo of motivations behind why the artist created the work and what the work is saying about the artist. Our objective is to highlight these motivations. It is a passing of the baton of responsibility of their work from the original creator and relaying that intent to this audience and society. Our goal now is to not to represent the information, but give an experience and a level of interaction with the material to grow each group's relationship. So I've said all this stuff, right? Okay, well, let's actually get to some of the examples that we kind of see in our everyday lives, and that would be these, okay? I would imagine that all of you here have a subscription to at least one of these, right? Yeah. Well, in the early aughts, society had begun to shift, realizing that the digital age had brought about a technology that the public was at the first time only enamored with, but soon they would be engulfed with it for the foreseeable future. For many such organizations, streaming video transitioned from a nice-to-have curiosity to a mission-critical technology. And that's no exception for us. In fact, we actually have a new service that acts just like any one of these called Overdrive. And this service allows the user to access millions of titles spanning multiple platforms to play, read, and house their online materials. All you need is a library card, and you're ready to go. We must be cognizant of how we want to continue to present our work and interact with our audience while considering what next technologies might be out there that the public might be aware of and comfortable with to use, and then we use that knowledge to our advantage. Then we have examples and actual glams out there. And The first is augmented reality. I'm sure plenty of you know what AR is. Augmented reality I've been working with for the past year in my library and for multiple projects. And for those of you who don't know, AR just augments the material you're showcasing, giving the user more information about the material, as well as a chance to be linked out to various other sources. Played video and audio clips, photo galleries, ties to social media outlets, email, geo layering, and even you can create your own apps for presentation. What it would look like if we were using this slide, for example, and you had your iPad out using the Layer app, it would kind of look something like that. And then basically you would click on any one of those and it would go out to a different link source like those websites, or you could hear that audio sample, or that's a picture gallery right there. You just swipe right on your smartphone. Then we have smart rooms or smart clothes forming sensory simulation. This came from an exhibit that MIT did. They did two separate ones, basically using technology to interact with their surroundings in the museum setting. One where they wear actual technology to get across the objects in the room, and wherever they would step, the sensor would see that, and then it would either project or play a video clip or an audio clip. Another example that they did was that using another wearable, it would act as like a virtual museum curator. So if you would move, it would know, and then it would sense that in the heads-up display, and then it would either play a video clip or show different pictures, or basically augmenting the experience. And now we come to the last example that I kind of have, and it's by Bill Brown. He's a distinguished professor from the University of Chicago. He works with thing theory, and he basically there were experiments done with his findings, and how it would work is that you'd be in a dimly lit like lobby area before you started the exhibit, sort of like that. And the next thing that would happen is that they would play an audio clip, and hopefully this works. So then they would play another audio clip after that. And then we play one final one. So after every audio clip, you kind of get a sense of what's going on, right? You get the visual of all of those. Well, when you would come out of the room, they would play the whole audio clip together. And what this was doing was, what they wanted to try to get out of the audience was that a sound collage, these building of sounds, would make the experience that more, much more powerful, that you were more immersed in actually what was going on. They would also do a similar example where they would have the sound of ice, what the patrons thought was ice or butter burning on a skillet, and what they came out to find was the actual exhibit was on slave ownership and what they would do to slaves. I know that's a morbid thought to think about, but that was what they were trying to get across to their audience, is a new kind of experience, and one that touches you to the core, and you should be able to take away that knowledge on a different level. So with all of this said, I'll end with this. We have entered a new world, one where interactions are key to strengthening learning, where a single user can change how the minds of others react to content quicker than we could have ever imagined before, where viewing content is no longer a social activity, but rather a part of daily existence. The future between our collections and society will continue to see new advancements and exchanges, relationships, triumphs, and failures, leading to a world that will be constantly changing its approach to experiencing audiovisuals. But how can we thrive in the digital age? In the case of libraries, archives, museums, and cultural heritage foundations, the preservation and access to materials, in this case audio, will be the top priority continuing on in future. We must take it upon ourselves to instill this new life into our collections, where we can be innovative, make our collections easily digestible using our content and new technology, where we can present a richer historical context and deeper understanding of our archival content and pack these relationships groups on a bigger level. As time goes on, the digital era will continue to develop and more changes will occur. And this, with this development in technology, the user in society will be tasked with a new role on how to approach, relate to, and use our resources to access, value, exhibit, preserve, and interact with our items. Our collections will allow us as an artist to affect learning communities. We will thereby be able to create, nurture, transmit, and use media content to get across significant information that before lacked the level of interaction that made these items come alive. This is our true role as an artist, where we will continue to navigate the digital terrain using new approaches, making it easier for people to experience a world of information so that they may learn, reflect, and analyze the world with which we live in. Thank you.